Hello world, it's Rome Madison, genomic sales expert, speaker, and author here in Dallas, Texas, and you are listening to Race, Violence, and Medicine.
Welcome to Race, Violence, and Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Brian H. Williams, and today we have as our guest, Rome Madison. Rome is a genomic sales expert. He's a public speaker, and he hosts his own podcast, or I guess he's one of the hosts of a podcast known as Precision Medicine. So we're going to learn something about that today, what exactly that means. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy this show. Rome, thank you for joining us here on Race, Violence, and Medicine.
Brian, it's an unbelievable honor and a privilege to be on your podcast. I've listened to you. You're doing some amazing, amazing things and very important work. So I just really appreciate your consideration for asking me to come on and be a guest. So thank you for that.
No, I appreciate it. I get to meet these interesting, fantastic people. I just need to share their stories with other folks. And full disclosure, I get some secondary gain, right? Because people that might not really talk to me otherwise won't appear on my show, right?
no doubt about it. We'll take that.
All right. So doing my Google search on you, I see you have a couple of names. There's Rome. There's Jerome. You want to break that down for us so we don't confuse our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of part of my background. So my Uncle Bubba, when I was young, called me Rome. So I grew up, through elementary school, I was Rome. But obviously when I went into the professional world, I went by my middle name, which is Jerome, because my grandmother didn't think my first name, Elliot, sounded too great. So I was Jerome before I knew better. So as I started growing professionally, I was always Jerome Madison in the workplace. And there came a point in time in my life's journey when I hit a season of unemployment, which really changed my entire life. The experience and the other things that were happening in my life that we'll get to shortly. But during that time is when I became an entrepreneur. And I was a model full-time. I became an actor during the year that I was unemployed. And my idea was to use all the gifts that God has given me to create increase in my space and not be defined by what an employer or someone says I'm worth or what they deem my quality of life is going to be. So I just got serious about being an entrepreneur and using those gifts, those talents, those ideas that I'd been blessed with to create that increase in my life. I went online. This is early 2000s. And I reserved the domain name, RomeMadison.com, because JeromeMadison.com was taken.
All right. Now hold it for a second. Okay. We're going to go in one direction, but you mentioned entrepreneur, speaker, genome expert, model. There's a lot more going on here than I anticipated. So let's break that down. Like, tell us a little bit more about what got you to where you are now. Yes, there's certainly a lot of threads there. Can you concisely explain all that?
Absolutely. So the turning point in my life was around 2003, and I was working in the pharmaceutical industry. And for those who may be familiar with the pharmaceutical industry, you understand that layoffs are common. A drug loses its patent, they lay off an entire division of their workforce. And so I was kind of caught up in that type of situation. And for a year, I wasn't able to find the right opportunity. I would go to other pharmaceutical companies and, whether it was my salary being too high or, not having the right experience, I just couldn't get an opportunity. So it was during that year that I was unemployed, didn't have a job and really no job options after a while, that my mother, who raised three kids as a single mom, our first college graduate in our family, but she suffered from mental illness most of her adult life. So from the time that I was 13, I was working, helping my mother pay bills. And at this point in time in my life, 2003, my mom went into this downward spiral where she had her most debilitating mental breakdown. She stopped going to work. she eventually lost her job and eventually lost her home. And that was a time where I'm really not in a position. I'm really struggling financially, but I've been responsible for, you know, my mom, you know, growing up as a single mom, taking care of kids like that. You know, I felt that was my responsibility and I could not do that. And my mom spiraled into a lifestyle of homelessness. And Brian, I don't mean just the fact that she didn't have a house that was in her name. I mean, my mother was literally a homeless person. And mental illness is something that, especially in the African-American community, we don't really talk about as much, but it takes a toll not only on the individual that suffers from that, but also the extended family.
Right.
So that was a tough time, you know, in my life, just struggling with my mom, trying to get her the help that she needs, helping her to make, you know, good decisions and putting her in a better position. During that same year, my brother, who was going to Baylor University, he drops out of college to, you know, take care of my mom. And he does that by starting to hustle. And that didn't end up very well. You know, he gets busted and gets in trouble. You know, with
so you mean hustle in the criminal sense, because we can have some side hustles that are legal. Yes. And enhance. Yeah. Our incomes, but you're talking about something that's illegal.
Yeah, very much not legal, you know, just selling drugs out there, and he gets caught up in that. But it was during that year that I was unemployed, 2003, that I came across a gentleman by the name of Pat Coons. And because I couldn't find a job, you know, I was out surgical companies, medical companies. I just was just caught up in a bad cycle when, you know, it's easier to find a job when you already have a job. And when you're unemployed, people kind of look at you like you have a stench on you. And I was experiencing that in that season of my life. And that was the year that they finished the Cancer Genome Atlas project. So I got the opportunity to interview for this one company that took human tissue and did an in vitro assay to identify which patients are likely to be candidates for different chemotherapies. And at that time, because the Cancer Genome Atlas project had just completed, we were now, you know, finding targets for targeted therapies, more specific biological agents.
So let me break in there for one moment there. A couple of things that you talked about really resonated with me when you talked about homelessness and mental illness. I think it's important for people to recognize that nobody chooses to be homeless, and that there are a lot of homeless people that are not getting adequate mental health services. And that is something that this country can really, should address. And secondly, you mentioned that having a mental illness within the family, it impacts the entire family unit. One person does not deal with that alone. The ripple effects can be rather profound. And you've shown that with your family. It impacted your brother, had to drop out of school to take care of your mother. You're talking about the impact that it had on you. And
yeah, absolutely.
But you took us from there to the Genome Project. Can you tell us what that was, and then how you got involved in that? Because many folks may not recognize the importance of that project.
So the Cancer Genome Atlas Project was something that took close to 20, 25 plus years to complete. And we identified the sequence of our DNA, every gene in the human body. We know that there are over 27,000 or so of these genes, but today we only really know the function of less than 300 of them. But it's being studied every day. Now, at that time, 2003, it took maybe a full day or two to sequence a person's genome, and it costs upwards of, you know, several thousands or tens of thousands of dollars to do that.
So what does that mean to sequence a genome? What does that mean to a non-molecular biologist?
Absolutely. So our DNA are composed of different proteins. They're labeled, for simplistic terms, T, C, G, and A. And there is a normal sequence of our genes that make, you know, as they're expressed in my body, makes me look like me, and in your body makes you look like you or any other person. As human beings, we all are 99.99999% alike, but it is the manifestation of how those genes are expressed through environmental factors or hereditary factors that make us who we are. And this project set out to sequence what's considered normal and then look at variations in human beings and find causative factors for disease. And then use that information to manipulate the genome to provide solutions for disease, not only to treat them when they have disease, but, you know, forward thinking, be able to find those changes before disease happens and intervene to prevent disease.
So this is stepping into the area of some, you know, some science fiction, early intervention, medical therapy. Like, you're not waiting for them to get sick. You're preventing them from getting sick well before that by using some targeted therapy at the molecular level. Was that a fair way to describe that?
Absolutely. There's a lot more implications today as the technology has evolved, but, you know, as we were explaining the story back then, it was very one-dimensional. It was like precision medicine 1.0, and today we're probably on, you know, version 27.
Wow. Okay. Precision medicine. What does that phrase mean?
So precision medicine is the industry that was born out of the sequencing of the genome, because now there's many different ways to measure the gene, the expression, and the sequence of these genes. So back then, when I started in the industry, we literally had to go into the operating room with the surgeon. So as, you know, wide excisions of something was being done, or a liver biopsy or a craniotomy, or they're taking out a lung that's diseased and has cancer. Well, we took pieces of that, about a thumbnail sized piece of the tumor, and put them in a lab environment, put super pharmacologic doses, or, you know, hyper extra doses of chemotherapy on it, and to see if there's still DNA activity. And if the studies have shown back then that if there's still DNA activity happening for doses that the human body cannot tolerate, the chances of it working in therapy are less than 2%. It was 98.2% accuracy of ruling out drugs that will not work. So now the industry has grown to where instead of getting human tissue, we can do it on saliva, we can do it in urine, we can find some of these signatures in blood or archive tissue, to where you can sequence the genome now in 15 minutes and find these targets.
Well, I'm guessing that there have been some robust ethical discussions about this field of precision medicine. You talk about talking about using genes to treat people and targeted genomic therapy. There must be some naysayers out there. Is that fair to say?
Oh my goodness. So, you know, when I started in the business, you know, I was a district manager for this company, and we had 10 states. And the reason was it took 10 states to find one person who's really going to listen to you. You know, we just weren't there yet. And we identified who the early adopters and the influencers were, key opinion leaders in this particular field, and we developed them. And as over the years have changed, when the technology has evolved to make sequencing less expensive and more efficient, and then we have more targeted therapies that target specific mutations that have revolutionized how we treat diseases like melanoma, which is skin cancer that is extremely deadly. You can have a melanoma that's, you know, 4 millimeters wide and can be extremely deadly. And things like lung cancer, where traditionally 10 years ago, if the diagnosis of lung cancer, 50% of those patients who had that diagnosis were deceased in 12 months. Well, now with the advent of precision medicine, because of a number of targeted therapies and immunotherapies that helps your body fight the disease, that has extended the life of a person with a non-small cell lung cancer diagnosis well beyond 12 months on one oral therapy besides chemotherapy, which is non-selective and you know, just kind of kills every cell. But the targeted therapy only kills those cells that have the mutation and leaves the healthy cells alone.
All right, Rome. I have a lot of questions here I want to ask you. I want to talk about, is there any relationship between precision medicine, and we talk about, you know, the stem cell research that, or, you know, or fetal cell research that people talk about, the ethical dilemma there, cloning of, you know, animals that have been happening. You know, I guess the most famous is Dolly back in the day. So I'm hoping you can break this all down, but I want to take a break before we get to that discussion, if that's okay with you.
You bet.
All right, so thanks for tuning in. This is Race, Violence, and Medicine. We are with Rome Madison. He is a public speaker, genome sequencing expert. Is that correct? Did I get that right, Rome?
It's industry expert. Genomic industry expert, yes.
Right. We're talking about precision medicine. I'm getting a free education, and I hope you're enjoying this as well. Remember, you can follow this podcast. My main platform is Anchor FM, but it is available anywhere you listen to your podcast. And I'd appreciate if you would share with your family and friends and send me your feedback. This is Race, Violence, and Medicine. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Race, Violence, and Medicine. Our guest today is Rome Madison. He's a genomic industry expert. We are talking about precision medicine. And before the break, Rome, we talked about, you know, we're talking about your family background, and you were mentioning your mother's homelessness and mental illness. And I would be remiss if we didn't go back and complete that story. We kind of diverged there for a moment, but I think it's important for our readers to talk about the impact of homelessness and how that impacted your life. So can you finish that story for us?
Well, I can tell you what it did is it made me fearful of nothing. And I mentioned the idea of working as a model and being an actor because, Brian, literally, I had nothing else to do. I mean, I didn't have a job. So, you know, I was doing all I possibly can to bring in some income. And fortunately, I found success in that. But I will say this, finding my mentor, Pat Coons, who was the hiring manager for the company that hired me. I had no experience in oncology. I had no experience in the operating room, but this job required me to be in those two environments. So to prepare, because I didn't have a job, I went to Barnes and Nobles and Borders Books. For those of you out there, you do remember there used to be bookstores, you know. You know, Brian, I laugh because back then we used to go to bookstores to have a cup of coffee and read, but now we go to coffee shops to have a cup of coffee and read, you know.
On our phones.
But that's how I learned. I got, you know, Cancer for Dummies, a Mosby's Medical Dictionary. I bought it and looked up these terms to be able to be competitive and compete for the job because it was one of the only opportunities that I had available to me. So I just had to make the decision to do it and to educate myself. And long story short, I did get the job. And the income that I earned from being in the industry and being successful allowed me to be in a place to take care of my mother and to help my brother. So I'm very grateful for this industry and the avenues it has provided me. And since those early days, I've just grown with the data. I've grown with the key opinion leaders and grown with the different subsets of the industry that have spawned as precision medicine has grown.
But you're an example of what tenacity and dedication and commitment can yield, right? You can credit the industry for a lot, but you made it happen. So that's an example for anybody out there listening.
Right? Absolutely, for sure.
So back to this industry of precision medicine, I threw out some terms there before the break about stem cell research, fetal cell research, yeah. Cloning. Are these in any way related to what you're doing? Talk about, you know, the science behind it, and also are the ethical arguments sometimes conflated?
I'm not sure that the ethical arguments are conflated. Now, to be clear, like cloning and those types of things are not considered precision medicine. However, okay. the technology that enables it are. It's kind of wide ranging because, for instance, now we have gene editing therapy that's available, where you can go to a major cancer center, like Johns Hopkins, for instance, will have this. And there's a way, there's a technique to be able to splice into your DNA and edit, or that is to change the sequence of a DNA or RNA sequence, where now it replicates healthy cells. So you've gone in and spliced a cell and interrupted the errant sequence that causes cancer cells or carcinogenic cells that don't tend to die. They tend to multiply faster than normal cells, and they evade the body's natural immune system to be recognized as a harmful cell to the body. Well, now, because of gene editing technology, you can go in, splice one of those cells, interrupt that sequence to correct it or to be a healthy cell, to where now healthy cells start to multiply, and you get better in that way. So the techniques and the technology that's available to help cancer patients are very similar to those in some way for those who are doing.
So I guess it's important. Precision medicine is about targeted therapy for cancers. Is that correct?
Well, it started out in cancer, but today it's autoimmune disease. Any disease like cardiovascular, neonatal, neurology, even rheumatoid arthritis. Now, the vast majority of these studies in autoimmune diseases that are looking at new therapeutics have a genomic or genetic dimension to it, that they're looking for a specific genetic target that gives you a little bit more information about who's likely to benefit from that therapy and who's not.
That's interesting. There's this term I heard not too long ago called precision population health, which is in theory kind of the same things you're talking about, but it's looking at it at a macro level and how you target diseases in large populations of people. And working in trauma and in community health, it seems counterintuitive to try to apply those techniques on such a large scale. But I guess in reality, those theories can be applicable and successful. So,
it's a good effort, that's for sure. And the key is getting the train moving, because Dr. Keith Stewart, who is the director of the Mayo Clinic's Center for Individualized Medicine, I had the pleasure of interviewing him on the Precision Medicine podcast. And one of the things that he's doing, he's an advocate of the quote unquote healthy genome. Now, there's a contingency of people out there that'll say there's no such thing as a healthy genome. Everybody has some type of disease or something that they're dealing with at every time that the body is fighting. But he contends that you want to get your DNA sequence, you want to get your genome sequenced so you can have a baseline of what's normal for you. So as changes happen, let's say you go to your annual physical, you'll get an update every single year as to what changes are there. And the key with that is to get a broader population of people to participate. The National Institute of Health, NIH, is sponsoring the All of Us Project. Because to be for sure, Brian, the original Cancer Genome Atlas Project, the control group was based on, something equivalent to 50 Caucasian people from Buffalo, New York. So if that's the baseline, how do I know if I have a mutation versus someone else from a different, heritage having the same mutation, that they're going to respond the same if given a therapeutic? Well, we're completely different people. So there is, with the All of Us Project that the NIH is sponsoring and Mayo is participating in, there's a push to get as many diverse people into the study as possible to learn as much as we can about the diversity of our genomes and how disease manifests when we have different aberrations in our DNA.
But even with that, that is kind of an interesting comment about race, right? Because even with that cohort of 50 Caucasians from Buffalo, 99.99% of our genome is like yours and mine, even though we're black men.
Yes.
We're not going to get on the absurdity of racism. for this podcast today, but gotta toss it out there and just think about that. So you mentioned your podcast, Precision Medicine. Tell us about that.
So the Precision Medicine podcast. So I'm a vice president with a technology company out of Boston called Intervention Insights. I have been in the precision medicine industry really on the product side with clinical laboratories, central labs who do the testing for cancer centers. So cancer center will send out tissue to central lab. Central lab does that specific testing, sends a report back on that patient's ability to respond to different therapies. Well, now that is very much commoditized. There's a lot of companies out there doing that. So I saw an opportunity to move to the bioinformatics space and decision support tools, because what's key and what's going to help precision medicine really grow is not the fact that people are doing the sequencing, it's creating tools that make it a part of the workflow. So it doesn't disrupt clinic. So it doesn't inconvenience physicians. And what makes our product Trapelo very different than other decision support tools out there is that it specifically seeks to eliminate prior authorization. Prior authorization, insurance prior authorization, meaning that there's a patient who is at a point in their care that they need a certain something, whether it's a therapeutic, whether it's a scan, an MRI, but insurance makes the provider do a prior authorization, send a bunch of stuff to them, give me your history and physical notes, jump on the phone with me and tell me why you want this. Well, it's a deterrent. And there are studies that show that because prior authorization exists, the likelihood or the willingness of doctors to even want to do the sequencing to find a therapeutic for a patient is greatly diminished because they don't want to go through that process. So there are therapeutics that can revolutionize a patient's care that because of this problem that we had with prior authorization and, you know, payers battling it out, it becomes an administrative nightmare. It becomes a financial burden on the clinic to throw resources to get on the phone and do these things. So as a result, many times it's not done.
Right. So you mentioned you're an entrepreneur as well. I met you because I know you're a public speaker. And then as I peeled back the layers, I recognized found there's all these other interesting facets of your identity. Let's talk about your public speaking career. I mean, where can people find you to come speak? What do you talk about?
Absolutely. Well, you can Google Rome Madison. RomeMadison.com is my website. You can also catch any of my social media platforms from my website or just by, again, Googling Rome Madison. And the impetus to get me to speak was really the story that we opened with, kind of sharing my journey of, you know, my mother having mental breakdowns, my brother kind of getting in legal problems with trying to take care of my mother, and me having a resolve that I was just going to use everything that I possibly could to create increase in my world while I'm here, to do what I can to help my mother and my family. And after I, you know, started to be successful and started to really understand precision medicine, you know, Brian, my thought was, this is such an unbelievable story. Like, no one, like, who's going to believe that this kid, ex-football player, you know, just out of nowhere, just went to Barnes & Noble and started studying and learned precision medicine, self-taught oncology. Now, I had a lot of mentors and certainly learned how to read, you know, different journals and papers.
And I'll tell you something, Rome, this story better be true because I'm going to post it in a couple of weeks. So I don't want to shatter my credibility as a host.
Well, I write about it and I speak about it everywhere I go. So
All right.
No worries there. But that's what Rome Madison is all about. That's my story. When I go and I speak to organizations, it is really about finding that part of you as an individual and that organization that makes you uniquely special, right? And embracing that, not, you know, trying to be a clone of someone else, not trying to put up, you know, kind of a false personality via social media, just really embracing who you are. And when you do that, you become a light from someone else to look at themselves and appreciate what they have. You know, and my keynote at that time was called "You Are an Everyday Superstar." And that's when I started speaking in schools and prisons and in corporations as well.
it's a universal story about being true to yourself, sounds like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that message has grown. I've just actually finished my third book for salespeople, for sales organizations. And it's titled Why Superstar Sales Professionals Have No Competition, The Skills and Habits of Elite Salespeople.
Well, Rome Madison, genomic sales expert, author, podcast host, vice president. I mean, I can keep going on and on, Rome. I'm not sure how to really encapsulate everything that you represent, but certainly an inspiration, and I've learned a lot today, and I realized I need to kind of step up my game.
Well, you are doing awesome things. I am greatly encouraged by just getting to know you and listening to the work that you do. Again, it's very important work, and I'm just really proud to be a part of it.
All right, thanks. So one last time, why don't you list your website for people to come track you down?
Absolutely. RomeMadison.com. You can catch me on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.
That's Rome, like R-O-M-E, in case you're out there unsure of how to spell that. Rome Madison, thank you for joining us here and sharing your story with me and my listeners on race, violence, and medicine.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
And I want to thank you, my listeners, for tuning in today. I appreciate you. Remember, you can go to my website, brianwilliamsmd.com. And that's B-R-I-A-N. And there you have all my social media tags. You can sign up for the newsletter, follow the podcast. And also, just feel free to drop me a notice or suggestion about what you would like to hear on this show. I want to make sure every show is worth your while, and I will gladly accept your critique and suggestions. And as far as social media, I am most active on Twitter at VHWilliamsMD. And please, I know you're listening to this show, so you know where to find me, but let your family, friends, and anyone else in your network that you think will enjoy the content, let them know about race, violence, and medicine. Thank you for tuning in, and that will conclude our show for this episode.